Hi, this is Almost Reckless from The Creative Pragmatist, and I'm Amy Smilovic. Listen, we all know it's important to eat right and exercise. We think about staying fit through this lens, right? And we know that part of this is getting a really good night's sleep. But until last week, I had never viewed sleeping as part of a fitness routine. And now I do. And that's because of our guest today, Alex Zatarain, who's the co-founder and VP of brand marketing at 8 Sleep. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You're the world's first fitness sleep company.
Exactly.
Is that the right way to say it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So congrats. Thank you for being here. Okay. Now, this conversation is not to convince you of the importance of sleep, even though that is super important, and we know that. But rather, it's a conversation about how entrepreneurs, business people, and creatives, and you can be all three of those at once, but how we identify new opportunities where seemingly every stone seems to have been uncovered. And a big part of that is like taking the risk to do big things. So I'm very excited to talk to you today. Alex, I really want to pick apart your brain today to figure out how you got to the place to make really big moves and see opportunities where others had no idea that it existed.
Happy to share. So I'm an open book. Anything that I can tell you about the last, it's been 10, almost 11 years. That's what I'm here for.
Great. Well, one of the things is I find that, you know, when you're going through life, it's a bit of like a pointillist painting, like a Seurat. It's all these dots and you're going through life and I feel like you're collecting dots along the way. And you kind of step back and you see what picture you're starting to make. But all those dots should always come together to form a picture. And I think a lot of people see their dots as starting like, oh, when I graduate from college or when I get this job. But I find for most people, they start really early on. And I'm curious for you in what you're doing today, what are the things early on in life that you look back at as like really instrumental to what got you the backbone to take the risk to do what has landed you as one of the top entrepreneurial women? And I mean, just a very big deal, right?
Now, I was answering this question a few days ago to someone else who asked me about it. Something similar vein. And I think ultimately what gave me the backbone itself is the family environment that I grew up in. Yeah. I grew up in Mexico. Culturally, you know, it's definitely a macho culture. Mm-hmm. Women play a certain role in society. A woman is motherly and is caring, but is not necessarily work driven or ambitious. And I was none of the things I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was lucky where my parents never expected of me or my sister, and I have a brother as well, to like fit in that mold, even though my dad particularly was of a different generation, mm-hmm. right? If my dad was alive today, he would be like, I think 76, 78 years old. So we were never told that we had to fit into that mold of the traditional Mexican woman. Mm-hmm. And we were allowed to pursue whatever crazy ideas I always had coming up about projects or hobbies or things in school or even when I wanted to go away for college. And I think that was what gave me the foundation. It still gives it to me today, I think.
So were you one of those, like, did you work a bunch of different jobs when you were younger? Like, what are the different kind of jobs that you've had
in your life? I did. I think that I was always a very active kid. Just to, like, I had the energy. I had the drive. I wanted to be the best. I was very disciplined. And it could be good or it could be bad, right? Like, there's that pressure of, like, always wanting to excel.
But was that pressure on yourself? Or because it doesn't sound like it's from your parents,
like,
right?
I was a perfectionist since when I was a kid, and from how I dressed and my shoes being cleaned and, you know, like just I had those traits.
Yeah.
And so as I started growing up and being a little bit more independent as a teenager, I was the one getting the summer jobs and just because I wanted to do things.
Yeah.
I wanted to feel useful.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't wasting time and I felt like I had so many things that I wanted to learn and experience and I would take any opportunity to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that a lot of people that I talk to, they really discount all those first jobs that they had to creating their learning. And I was thinking just in our own office, our strongest executives, a lot of them, they either waitress at restaurants, they work on a line, and it's a place where you really learn. It's not like teamwork, like, hey, we should all get along teamwork. It's like teamwork that you can have good food and good service and be in a good location. But if you are missing one of those three things, if the place is bad, it doesn't matter if the food is good. Yeah. Or if the service is horrible, it doesn't matter if the food was good or if the location is great. Like, all three have to work together in tandem. So you don't just, it's not like a sports team in general or like niceties.
There's a collaboration.
Yes.
Yes.
So like, are there jobs that you, like, what are the things that you pull on every day that are just certainly nothing that you would have learned in school or business school?
Yeah. You know, that my first job was, I was a dancer growing up. I started dancing all sorts of different disciplines since when I was three, which I also think gave me a lot of sort of that side of creativity and love for the arts and self-expression and confidence in my body and, you know, all those amazing
pushing
traits.
Yourself.
Yeah. But at some point I started being like a teacher's assistant at my dance school. And then I was like a teacher myself, and I was teaching little girls, and they were like 3 or 4 years old, and it was their initiation into dance. And I mean, what can you not learn about that, right? It's so just incredible to see what you can instill in others when you are teaching, but also you have that responsibility. And I was probably like, I want to say 16 or 17 at that point. So it felt so empowering, but at the same time, like this incredible responsibility of all these little girls and getting them to love the arts as much as I did.
Yep. I find with a lot of entrepreneurs who are responsible for either, you know, selling their product, I don't mean like literally on a sales floor, but either to investors or to the consumer on social media, or even thinking about how it's going to be sold in social media, that those who have had teaching in their background somewhere are the ultimate communicators. They're really good at breaking down information. And I mean, I would imagine, like, if you haven't connected that dot, that like,
I had not,
breaking
yes.
that down for
yeah.
young students, it gets you into that rhythm of simplification. And, you know, I yeah. love that. So were you at all like the budding entrepreneur when you were growing up? Or
no, I never thought I would be an entrepreneur. Absolutely. Like, it never crossed my mind.
It didn't cross your mind, but would it have crossed the mind of anyone in your family? Or
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think everyone in my family and my friends would have said that I would, that I was ambitious for sure. And, you know, I was the typical young girl being called bossy. And because I was like a little leader, I would be the one kind of getting in front of the pack and saying, hey, let's do this or let's do that. I was class president in high school. Like, I was that person.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, I don't think it was like entrepreneurial, or no one would have thought that. And it was not something I ever expressed, even though my dad was an entrepreneur.
Interesting.
Smaller, medium-sized business locally where I grew up. But I never thought about it, which is interesting because I saw that growing up.
You talked in the beginning about how growing up in Mexico, you've got these kind of machismo like stereotypes and everything happening. But did you have any people growing up that you were like, okay, this is giving me an idea of what I want to be? Or were you just kind of in a current floating along, doing your thing? Like, not, I don't mean floating like, life is good, I'll just pass, you know, chill out. But I'm just curious, like, did you have a wall of mentors in your mind that you were looking at?
Mentors that did not know about me, but it was television.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up on the border and our we would basically be able to consume the TV from the United States. So we would be able to watch ABC, CBS, NBC, you know, and I grew up in the 90s and it was, you can imagine all the programming at the time. So at some point when I started watching Oprah Winfrey, I started learning more about her, and there was Barbara Walters, and, you know, there was like Diane Sawyer, and there were all these women in television, and particularly Oprah, who became really a businesswoman. Mm-hmm. And that started to shape something in me because I knew at a very young age that I wanted to go to school to study communications. I fell in love with media and with telling stories. And so when I saw these women on TV and how they were shaping their lives to not just be the reporter or the host, but to be more than that, it opened my mind to a different world. I remember watching Martha Stewart on The Apprentice. Like, that's what mentored me. And if I wouldn't have had that, I don't think I would have had that North Star of saying, well, that could be me, you know, even coming from such a different place in the world.
was there literally an aha moment like that you can remember where like you turned on Oprah and you're like, okay, you know, this is it. Like, or,
you know, I was obsessed. I would watch it every day. It was the weekdays. And I don't know at which point it was. I don't know how long I'd been watching her for. And I wouldn't necessarily watch because of the content itself. You know, sometimes it was maybe meant for people that were a little bit older, but I was just enamored by seeing her and what she was building and the book club and the favorite things. And I thought, this is incredible.
Yeah.
And at some point I told my moms, like, I want to work for her one day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to work with her. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just so impressed by this woman and what she had achieved. And that moment, my mom probably remembers it still. It's like, it really marked her as like, okay, she's really driven, you know?
Yeah. I think one thing that's interesting is that, you know, when we've talked before, everything that you describe seems quite fluid. And I find that a lot of people, when they read books about people who've succeeded or whatever, there seems to be such a prescription where there are these people who like go skydiving, you know, off the roof of their house on the weekend, like that they like take these massive risks. Or that they literally, you know, from the age of three, you know, had written down, I'm going to be president one day, you know, but you seem to have had a lot more ease with how you've moved into things. And I'm just, you know, when did you like really kind of say, whether it's Oprah's assistant or whatever, but when did you say like, I'm going to do something in business. And so here's like at least a 3-year plan to get there. Like, was there a time when you kind of laid it out for yourself?
I think actually the first time I've ever done like a longer term planning was last weekend with my husband, who, as you know, I built this company with, where we said, what do we want the next 5 years to look like?
Yeah.
But I had never in my life really thought about, this is where I want to be, or this is what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely more fluid, but the way I approach it is that anything that I'm doing in that moment in time, I'm going to give it my all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's how it ends up happening for me, even though sometimes there are things that don't, but it amounts to something because I'm putting my everything at every single stage.
So when you do that, do you feel like you've ever taken a really super big risk, or has everything just been so solid and thoughtful in that moment that it feels like just these natural steps to you?
I'm actually very decisive to the point where probably I'm not that thoughtful, meaning I don't think too much about the decisions I'm making. I'm very much like in my instinct and my gut, and I feel myself and how convinced I am about the step I'm going to make. And the company started because my husband and our other co-founder, Max, were chatting about this idea. My husband sort of had this aha moment about the issues with sleep and how technology could help. So,
and you guys were married at that
point. We were not married yet, but we were together. So knowing that I was sort of the marketer by trade, or, you know, just that's what I had studied in school, but I was not very experienced. They said, why don't you join us? Why don't you come on board and help us launch this product? And I was 24. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I love you guys. And I think this idea is amazing. My father had just passed away from cancer. I feel like it was this moment in my life where a lot was changing. And I had to make the decision to leave my comfortable job in New York City, where I was working with a great boss and a great company, and a financial technology firm. It was very different, but I was loving it and liking it. And I felt like there was a lot of potential. And I didn't think it twice. I think it was just such a reaction to what they were proposing to me as an opportunity. And the mission was very powerful, and it felt very connected to what I had just experienced in terms of sleep and health with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I like said yes really, really fast, which was a huge risk.
I can imagine that you sat there and you felt like it was a really good idea, but was there anything in your gut telling you, like, I don't know, with your father having just passed away, that like it's kind of like a, what do you really have to lose? You know, at this point, like you know what it means to lose now at this point, and you know that that's not on the line. Like, did things like that run through your head?
I had never thought about it that way, but that's probably a big reason. Like, I felt like, oh, we just went through something really difficult and we figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
I will be fine. And I talk often about how that family foundation to me is so important, even all these years later, because I know that regardless of what happens, I can always go back home.
Exactly.
And I think that is very powerful, because in that moment, I didn't have to consult anyone. I was like, I know that I can take this risk and I will be out of a job and out of a salary and this thing may fail, but I can always go back home in Mexico and my family's going to love me and they will be fine and they'll
try
help
again.
Me restart.
Exactly. Yeah. It was interesting because I've always felt the same way. I grew up on a small island and very low-key, you know, parents, teachers, psychologists. And so to me, that was always my benchmark. The worst that could happen is we go and we live in a small house and we drive a Jeep and we can seine for shrimp for dinner and life is good, right? And but I also find for my husband, I don't know about your husband, but my husband has seen the worst that can happen through a different lens, you know, escaping communist Czechoslovakia at the time and his mom in concentration camps and all of that. So he has a very different idea of what the worst that could happen. You know, he's been in bunker mentality most of his life, which is a good like yin and yang for us, because sometimes I'm a little bit too like, oh, we'll just go drive a Jeep in Georgia. Is your husband, does he approach things in that same way?
We're
like
very
with
similar.
That ease? Yeah. And where's he from originally?
He's from Italy. He grew up in Italy. Yeah.
So you really like moved all outside of your elements, like trying a new, totally new field of industry.
Absolutely. It's like, I think in general, maybe that's a theme now that I, as you're describing it, I look at it is once I finished college and I had already met my husband and, you know, we were dating, but it was this new culture. We merged two cultures and three languages at home. And, you know, it was really getting me out of that environment I had grown up in. And I moved to New York, which was this new place. And we're both very similar. And we would just make decisions. Let's go start the company. Let's move to San Francisco. And we sort of created this union of we'll figure it out together. None of us have necessarily a plan B or an inheritance waiting for us. And so maybe there's that feeling that if we figured it out once, we'll be able to do it at any point in the future together.
So I'm curious, like when you, when you're like, I don't know whether it's in bed at night, driving home or wherever, like, do you ever get worried? Do like the bad thoughts come about, you know, like what do you worry about?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious.
Health. Mm-hmm. I think health is the big one. And it's probably coming from that experience with my father. It was so quick. It was like diagnosis to when he passed away was 4 months. And being young at that moment, I was 24.
Yeah.
That is the one thing I think a lot about is how do we stay healthy? How do you keep your loved ones healthy? And that ultimately you do realize that that's the only thing that matters.
So really, I mean, you probably feel like you could do anything as long as you're healthy.
As long as I'm healthy,
you know, you could take on anything.
Yes.
Like, do you ever, I mean, you've had huge amounts of rounds of funding, right? Like you, people really, really, really believe in what you guys are doing. How much does that weigh on you at all? I'm just, you know, being an independent brand, it's kind of like when you describe growing up that you were the one who was putting the pressure on yourself. And I feel like I put a lot of pressure on myself in that way. But wow, if I had a big group of investors, how do you do it? I'm just like getting a little bit of a stomach ache thinking about how I could handle that.
I think in Silicon Valley, it's an interesting dynamic because you don't necessarily, you have an accountability to your investors, of course, right? That's, they give you the money, you have to deliver certain results, but at the same time, venture is very different from other types of investors. And they know that they're taking a risk. They're investing in something that is not necessarily proven depending on the stage of the business they invest in. So when it comes to accountability and that pressure, I feel it more towards our team. I interact with our team every day. So that sense of these are people who have trusted us with, they're spending their lives with us, whether it's a year, 3 years, 7 years, 10 years, some of them, they're here just as committed as we are. they trust us to steer this boat in the right direction. I think that is the part that weighs the heaviest, to say, like, we got to deliver not just for ourselves, but for them. And as a consequence, our investors, I'm sure, will be really happy if we do.
Yeah. I know from when we spoke, you said that one of the things that was your biggest proof of concept was that you loved it and that it was working for you. And that if you knew that if you loved it and it was working for you, it would work for others, right? But that statement alone, though, isn't going to get big funding and all of that. How did you demonstrate, you know, proof of concept here when you were going out and getting your first, how much was your first round for it?
Our very first round was like $1 million, mm-hmm. which was what's called friends and family. Yeah. And then we raised our seed round of around $6 million. Mm-hmm. And then from there, the later stages.
And so when you raised your seed round, did you have real data at hand or was it like?
We had proof. So one of the things that's been the most challenging at 8 Sleep is that we're not, you could say that most of the companies in Silicon Valley maybe fall into the space of software, right? And so they are benchmarked differently and investors maybe are more comfortable investing in that space. Mm-hmm. We are a hardware consumer company.
Right.
We have AI, we have software, of course, but hardware adds a different level of complication to the business.
You're actually producing real product that's going to go in someone's home.
The cycles of how we use cash and all of that is just a bit more complex. And so not all investors are willing to touch those businesses. Yeah. They may not understand them. They may not want to invest in them.
Yeah.
So the very first time that when we raised the seed round, so that was like the first time that we had like a real round with investors, we had already launched a first product. It was a concept of a product that we put on crowdfunding. This was 2015. So there was crowdfunding platforms and there was these incredible community of people who would back it. And that campaign on crowdfunding was very successful. Mm-hmm. And it made like over $1.5 million or so in orders in 60 days.
That's amazing.
So that's what allowed us to then say, hey, we have proof that there are people out there who want this product.
Yeah.
Now we need money to be able to build them, build the business, and scale from there.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I know some of those people were our employees. They were so excited that you were coming in today. And I was telling you earlier, one of our top performing employees does have 8 Sleep. And so now I'm like, all right, maybe that is why she comes to work so bright and happy and just very, very smart. When you were looking for investors, what would have been a no-go for you? Where would you have drawn the line on the type of investors that you would work with?
Well, we got a lot of no's. So there were a lot of people who did not want us.
Right.
Many.
Yeah.
Many, many, many. I think that as an entrepreneur, as you know, rejection is a big thing. It's like a pill that you need to learn how to swallow. But
and I'm curious, when did you learn how to swallow it? Like, was it after the third? Was it after the fifth? Never. And
I think never. I think you never really learn because it feels so unnatural.
Yeah.
Right. It goes back to the childhood wounds that they tell you about, feeling that rejection from your mom or whatever it is. And so it probably there's always a nerve that it touches, and depends on the stage of life you're in and what you're going through. It may be less or more.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Does it ultimately empower you or make you curl up?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it makes me.
Yes. Yes. It gives you that fire. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe harder at the beginning because when the business at the stage that it is now and it's like a growth stage.
Yeah.
You feel like, okay, if you don't want to join me, maybe you're trying to hire an employee or an executive and they say no, or you're trying to get an investor on board and they say no.
Yeah.
You know that you have a business, right? Yeah. And so it's easier to turn around and say, we'll be fine. I know there's other people who do like what I'm doing. But in the early stages, you get more no's than yeses. And also, you're not necessarily growing as fast and you don't have as many customers and your team is very small and it's hard to recruit people to trust you to join this small startup that is still at a very shaky stage. So that was much more difficult.
So if you're going around and getting investors, you are in an absolutely very weak position if you don't have proof of concept. I mean, literally, proof of concept, like on the surface, is always going to make it easier. But I mean it more in terms of, I can imagine that your I would imagine that certainly proof of concept is important for any investor, but one of the most critical things as an entrepreneur is that you stay the course and you believe in your product. When you start going all over the place, that's when like disaster happens. And so that proof of concept is what you were like, well, thank you. You just don't understand it. Like you were able to turn it back on. It's their problem, not
your problem.
Yes and
no, because it was very hard at the beginning for our business because we launched on crowdfunding. It was very successful. Mm-hmm. And you realize that the community that is supporting you in the platform is different from maybe like the average consumer that now you need to speak to.
Right.
And create that connection and sell them this product that was this completely new category. So we went through phases where you had the high of having this successful crowdfunding, feeling like you're on top of the world. And then the down of, oh, wait a second, no one outside of crowdfunding is really buying this product, not at the rate that we want and that we need to sustain a business. So then that was paired with the rejections as well, right? It wasn't all we raised $6 million, but then after that, you still had to raise more rounds, you still have to hire people, and you get a lot of no's.
Yeah.
And that was paired with maybe the most difficult time of the business where we felt like we were not finding what people describe as product market fit.
So when you got no's, did any of the no's force you or encourage you to change anything, or were they wrong, you were right, and then you found someone who knew you were right?
No, actually, it is really valuable to try to get as much feedback as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think great investors will tell you something, you know, maybe you're not growing fast enough, the market that you're in is not fast enough, or your cost of acquisition is too high, or whatever it is, you need more margins, or they'll give you some honest feedback that then you can apply. And that is a thing that I do believe as a founding team, we've been really strong at, which is take that feedback, not take it personal, and say, okay, what can we learn from it? And how do we then prove to them, right?
Yeah.
Gets that fire going.
Yeah.
Let's prove to them that we can actually deliver and like meet that bar.
Well, I'm curious because when you're talking about metrics and everything, you also are in a brand new industry. Like you've created something brand new. So there's kind of metrics, but not really. And I find that's very challenging for a lot of people. You know, if you really are coming up with something outside of the box, but then you find yourself using measurement tools for the things that are literally in the box, then you might not be guided in the right way. So you probably had to really get a framework tight around what you guys were doing, like creating your own point
category,
of measurement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't realize initially that we were creating our own category. And that was one of the biggest mistakes that we made earlier on. And it was probably just a lack of confidence where we would look at other companies in just the tech space. And at the time, there was the smart home movement or the wearables, or there were mattresses in a box. And we were this kind of little startup with the idea that technology could help people sleep better, but no one else was doing that. Mm-hmm. So we tried to find the closest proxies, which were in completely different spaces with different missions. Their DNA was different. And we were measuring ourselves against them.
Yeah.
But also we were imitating a lot of what they were doing.
Yeah.
And that led us in the wrong direction for maybe 3-4 years.
And how did you write that ship?
So what happened is an investor actually, an investor came on board to lead one of our rounds, and he is someone very passionate about the sleep space, and he's one of the top investors in Silicon Valley. And he told us after the investment that we had to reposition the company, that the perception out there was that we were this sort of mattress company and no one was understanding that we had all this innovation and this technology and that our vision was completely different. And if we didn't change that, we were going to fail. And that was one of those big dots, you know, that when you look back, you say, so important in our trajectory. At the same time, it was a very challenging moment for me because it was up to me to figure out as the marketing leader, what does repositioning a brand mean? I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had never even heard those terms. So
how long did it take from like knowing that you needed to reposition and then feeling like, okay, the boat's been turned and we are now repositioned?
We did it in like 3 months.
Yeah.
we found an expert.
Mm-hmm.
She guided us through the process. We learned from it, and we were very committed, and it was almost like therapy is the way I describe it. I think we found the right expert for us, where the methodology that she uses is to really dig into the DNA of who you are as founders and why you built this company, mm-hmm. and to bring that out into the world. And it helped us create the concept of sleep fitness, actually.
When she was asking you to really dig deep, when you and your husband were doing that, were you coming up with the same, like, were you digging to the same place, or was he throwing out things that you were like, oh, no, babe?
We were very aligned.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I described the process that we went through, where, like, we were before that, this teenager just running around trying to fit in with the friends and rejecting their true self and hiding it. But deep down, you know who you are and you know the music that you like. And but you're scared of saying it because you think you're not going to fit in. And so we knew who we were.
Yep.
We would have conversations about it amongst ourselves.
Yep.
But no one else in the market of those sort of proxy competitors, if you want to think about it that way, was looking that way or sounding that way.
Yep.
And so we were afraid
mm-hmm.
that if we were going to embrace that, we were going to fail.
Right.
Because if they're doing it in this other method, and their brands look or sound a certain way, and they're growing well, then that's probably what works.
Right.
And we were wrong.
Right.
Because it wasn't working for us.
Exactly. And I find that, you know, when you, like, it sounds like you guys really dug down to your first principles there. And I think what's exciting when you do that from a business perspective, it's very exciting. And it's exciting when you realize that the people around you are aligned on those principles. But it's even more exciting when your spouse is aligned with you, right? Like, it's so funny because a lot of people tell me, they're like, I can't imagine working with my husband. And then they always make the comment that my husband and I are so different. And when you and I were talking and you described your husband, like, you guys really fulfill different roles, right?
We are.
Tell me how, like, give me some examples of how that works out. And I'm sure my son will laugh.
Yeah, because people say, how can you make it work?
Yeah.
We have different personalities. I think we're aligned.
Yeah.
So you're right. The alignment is what makes everything work.
Yes.
We know where we want to go in life, where we want to go in work, and, you know, how much we're willing to put into different projects in our life. And that is the foundation of it all. And then we do go about it differently.
Yeah.
So our brains work differently, mm-hmm. and we fulfill different roles in the company, which match
really
well.
Tell me what he does. What does he do in the company?
So he's the CEO.
Uh-huh.
So then I report to him. He's my boss at work.
No, right? same here. I mean, Frank would say differently, but same here.
Yeah, so I ultimately have to report to him my metrics, you know, in revenue and brand and campaigns and all of that. And I have to bring him into my world and make sure that at the same time as a founder, we are steering the company towards our ultimate mission. But because our brains do work so differently, but at the same time, we spend so much time together and mm-hmm. work is such a huge part of what we do, we have had to learn how to make it all just fit well. He was a lawyer mm-hmm. before becoming an entrepreneur. He, you know, is very much a perfectionist as well, but maybe I met someone who was even more of a perfectionist than I am, for sure. And he can spend hours just thinking about a problem.
Yep.
He can sit down at his desk. He has incredible focus and just think about it. Hours on end, discuss it, bounce it back and forth, ideas. And after the first months working together, I would feel so drained with that method.
Mm-hmm.
It worked for him,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized that each of us comes up with our best ideas in different ways. I actually need to disconnect from the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I go and watch, like, the trashiest TV or just, like, maybe some movie I've watched a million times that just brings me back to a cozy moment in my life. Or I go and take a walk or play with my dog. But I cannot sit and think about the problem over and over.
Yeah.
But to me, then the ideas will connect, like that painting. Like,
the dots start to come together.
Yes.
And I think it's interesting when you when you do partner with someone who on the surface would seem so different. But when you do connect on those first principles, what I love about first principles is it means that, like, you think you think in exactly the same way in terms of like where in your core, what's important to you, but how you put that into practice and the outcomes of it aren't going to necessarily be the same. But when you share those principles, there's so much mutual respect there for how one of you got to it. Even if sometimes like my husband comes in, he's like, why are you seen this movie 30 times? Like I'm watching Notting Hill again. And I'm like, I know, but honey, I'm actually thinking about the book, like, or whatever, you know, it is. Yes. So yes. That's my place.
That's me watching Notting Hill in a flight again for the 30th time. And like,
because I watch that as that's my background noise, because I know the movie so well that I can actually be in my head and watch the movie at the same time. Yeah. But he would never do things that way.
Absolutely not. He's next to me watching a podcast and he's just absorbing more and more and more of that content. And I'm like, I need a break. But it does become a superpower because it's like you're joining. There's two individuals who are building their life together, building a business together. And it's like you're joining. You're getting the power of two brains.
Exactly.
That's how I feel it.
And the two make the one. And I so agree with that. It's funny, when I was at American Express and we were interviewing for some jobs, I remember my boss came in and he said, do not hire anyone who is just like you. And I was like, why? Like, I mean, you know, at first I was like, do you not think I do a good job? Do you not? And he's like, no, we already have you. Mm. So, you know, you really need to make a list of like the things that like you envy in others, things that you wish, like build that second half of you. And when two things come together to make one, it doesn't mean that alone you're only worth half,
correct,
but it's just that like together it becomes unbelievably unstoppable.
Yes.
You know,
I like that.
And that I think I would imagine is where, you know, for me, that is where I get my resilience to, you know, do things that other people would consider like crazy or risky or whatever. But when you feel strong and when you've got a little metric to run across the worst case scenarios against and do the math quickly, you know.
Yeah, you're well supported to be yourself.
Are there times like, do you balance each other out? Like if you are in a super stress mode, does he like have a way of bringing it down? Do you naturally feed off each other in that
Absolutely.
Way?
Absolutely. It's an advantage of working together where we know exactly what the other one's going through.
Yeah.
What are the busiest times of the year? Is there a crisis that one of us is facing? And regardless of the relationship, it's like a, you know, he's my manager and whatnot. He is also my husband.
Yeah.
And so I find that to be very fascinating because he knows me so well and he knows how much he can push me.
Mm-hmm.
And he also knows that maybe at times he shouldn't push me. Just give me a little break. Like, give me that weekend. Just don't talk to me about work.
That balance is key because it's funny. I think for anyone who knows my husband here, they would say that he's the one who would be so worried about work. And or, you know, the numbers, right? But there are times where I'll just like really come home and I'm just so anxious about business and everything. And he goes right into that mode of like calming the situation down. He becomes like the softer one. Yeah. He becomes a like, it'll all work out person. And so, you know, when we were speaking earlier, you were talking, when you mentioned speaking with your husband, you did use the word at night a lot. And I'm curious how you do that separation of church and state. Like, how do you?
There's not a lot of that, but we have some methods.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is that we don't mix personal and work in like platforms. So we use Slack as communication for work in the company, and that's work.
Yeah.
And WhatsApp for us is personal.
Uh-huh.
And so it's two different things.
So you're like the government. You've got like two cell phones.
Like it's same cell phone, but similar concept. And the idea is that sometimes you may be having more difficult conversations at work, but you still want to know what we're having for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that helps us create that just separation, that line, and remind us that we are still a couple.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we do is dinner time.
Mm-hmm.
Many times we are talking about work. Work bleeds in. He needs to take a call. Maybe I need to take a meeting later. We need to get on a call with our team that is in a different time zone. But we know that dinner time is like we're going to eat together.
Yes.
We're going to eat. He's very much an advocate for eating the same meal, right? Very Italian. Like, we're not eating two different things. Like, we're going to sit as a family and eat the same thing.
I'm very impressed. So
we have to agree on
this. Yes.
What we're going to eat, right? Yes. And that helps us as well, because mm-hmm. the dinner is our moment where we mm-hmm. say, okay, this is us.
Yeah.
And then there's the exceptions of the moments where work will bleed and maybe he needs to go back to work at 9 p.m., but yep. dinner is us.
So I'm like making notes here because of this I've got to start doing for sure. But how would you describe, like, in a couple of words, who you are? Like, what is your, like, what are three adjectives that you would use to describe yourself?
I don't think I've ever thought about that, but that's a really profound question.
Can you do it off that? Like, you told me that you're a perfectionist.
I would say I'm not anymore. Uh-huh. It's interesting. I feel like I definitely was when I was young. I mm-hmm. wouldn't call myself a perfectionist now. Maybe mm-hmm. because I've married a perfectionist who's more than me, and I yeah. feel like I'm not anymore. I don't fit that yeah. anymore. But I would probably use the word driven for uh-huh. sure. I think I'm just naturally driven. I don't mm-hmm. know why. I just like to feel useful yep. and like I'm actually contributing something yep. and using all this energy that I have to do something that fulfills me.
Yeah. I consider, in my mind, to be driven is to always be pushing forward. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. to be pushing forward is like the height of modernity. Not in terms of, it doesn't mean like a steel building. It just means like you're really curious and just not settled.
Yes.
In a good way.
Which can backfire.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You definitely can struggle to relax. And, yes.
Yes, exactly.
But that is definitely me. Mm-hmm. So I would use that word. And I would use creative. Mm-hmm. I think it's just how my brain works. Mm-hmm. I tend to see patterns where maybe others don't. Mm-hmm. And that has served me really well in business. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what I bring to our founding team, to our executive team, and sort of have that different perspective, and how I connect my dots yeah. somehow ends up making sense. Mm-hmm. But maybe not in a traditional creativity way. I'm definitely not an artist.
It's funny when I hear someone speak very passionately the way that you do about what you're doing, that passion is such art to me. You know, you're not playing it to me as like an accountant would or anything. You know, like you use your hands, you know, you seem very in love with what you guys have created here.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yes. We do create a lot of art, I would say, mm-hmm. in the company, mm-hmm. Which is the fun part. It's what I love the most, and thinking of the stories that we tell and the campaigns that we build and the people that we partner with.
Yeah.
That is what I enjoy absolutely the most.
So where do you hope to take all this one day? Like, what's the end game for you guys?
We really want to be the company that everyone in the world thinks of when they think about sleeping well. Mm-hmm. And to build the products that through technology and innovation are delivering to every individual in the world the best night's sleep.
So when you talk to someone, investor, customer, whoever, like, what gives you the most satisfaction when, you know, what do they say that gives you the most satisfaction?
When they tell us, I hate traveling because I cannot sleep on my eight sleep. Mm-hmm. Like, what else?
Yeah.
Right? It's, we built a product that became now a necessity in their uh-huh. lives. And that's amazing because
yeah.
that's our baby. We created that product. Every single thing that you see in that product
yeah.
has my touch. And so whether you like it or you hate it, you can blame me. And that's what an amazing opportunity to have that in life, where you can bring a product into hundreds of thousands of people's homes and yeah. one day millions and billions and mm-hmm. build more products that can reach even more people. Like, that's the ultimate dream, I think, as an entrepreneur.
So when does it end for you guys? Like, is it the idea that you'll cash out one day? Or, I mean, like, I'm kind of just curious.
We've talked a lot about that. Of course, imagine when you're mm-hmm. building the business with your partner, it's the family, right, yeah. that is completely invested in. So even though it's not a family-owned business,
yeah.
Our family
yeah.
is fully invested in that. There's no plan B.
Yes.
So we discussed that a lot. Like, what does this mean for us? And is there too much risk involved, yeah. especially in the earlier years? And we know because going back to our gut, mm-hmm. right, each of us has determined that we're in it for the long run. Mm-hmm. And we're in it for the long run because we really feel like there's this incredible opportunity to build something that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of businesses that talk about that. I'm mission-driven and we're making a difference, but we operate in a space where we can really make a difference. It's people's mm-hmm. sleep, and that means health.
Yeah.
So we're already in it 10 years, and we want to keep going.
Yeah.
And we want to bring the entire vision of the company to life and build all of the innovations that we have in our minds and in our strategies about what technology could do for people's sleep in different stages of their lives. And so that's what keeps us super committed beyond anything that could be monetary.
Yeah.
The incentive is to make something that will really make an impact and that 100 years from now will be around.
Mm-hmm. That's so exciting. And like we talked about, like you guys clearly, like first entry in creating a whole category, it's really incredible what you've done.
It's fun. It's challenging to create the category. People probably still don't know where to fit us in, but the stories you can tell and the creativity that you have to bring in is required because you're creating something from scratch.
Yeah, I really, I just want to caution everyone who listens to this and who writes to me, just really kind of thinking about what your passions are and building things regardless of whether or not you believe that there's an industry that exists that supports it. Like, anything that's being done was not done at some point, right?
Absolutely.
And it's funny, the number, and you probably hear this too when you engage with people at, like, when you give talks and everything, but a lot of people feel like everything's been done at this point, and they don't realize that, number one, everything hasn't been done, or number two, even if it's has been done, there's always room for it to be done better. But and I think you experienced this and talked to this earlier. It's amazing how sometimes if you think it's been done and you dive into it, how just kind of plowing ahead and putting yourself into it, you ultimately create something that is your own. Like, you can't help it. We're all individuals in that way.
Yes. I think that the word individual is interesting because I was thinking about that in the lens of when you feel everything's been done.
Yeah.
If you can find one person who has a problem and their needs are unmet, that's a business opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there is one, there's probably 100, there's probably 1,000, and so forth. So it's just focus on solving that one problem, and the rest should take care of itself.
And we're literally in a world right now where you can reach all of those people.
Yes.
You're not confined by your zip codes or anything like that, as, you know, way back in the 90s or whatever you were. Well, congratulations for everything that you're doing. I would love to meet your husband one day and
and get that other side of the coin.
What's going on. Yes. And again, thank you for having a product that is making our employees, like, literally greet you like a rock star when you came in here.
As long as they're happy, healthy, productive, fulfilled, that's what sleep is for. So that's what
perfect.
We want to hear.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.